Sunday Surefire Podcast. I'm your host, the Commish. Joining me today is the co-host, Aaron Downtown Brown.
Hey.
And our other favorite co-host around here, Ethan Weaver.
Commish, how we doing?
We are doing pretty well, boys, doing pretty well. The NFL draft wrapped up just a couple of weeks ago, as we've talked about at length here on this show. But that's not the only thing that's come and gone down the pike here so far in this rapidly moving NFL offseason. We've also had free agency wrap up, at least the major moves anyway. We've had coaching changes come in and out. Such a lot going on. You know, the league shakes up this time of year, each and every season. So, you know, the landscape of the league looks very different today than it did when the football season ended just a few short months ago. So what we did here in this episode here tonight is we essentially just roped all of those factors in, and we're going to talk to you about some NFL veterans who are winners and some that are considered losers from a fantasy standpoint heading into 2024. We've had a lot of rookie coverage lately, so we're taking a break from those guys. I'm sure we'll touch more on them throughout the offseason, but for now, we're just sticking to the guys who have been around the NFL. These are all going to be names that you're familiar with if you're into fantasy football, so we'll run them down here for you, and naturally, we're going to start with the winners. And I'll dive in here, get us going with Ramondre Stevenson as a winner at the running back position. As we know, in 2023, it was a big disappointment, both for Ethan and I as Patriots fans. I think you can agree, right, Ethan?
Oh, yes, I can. Obviously, we're both very high on Stevenson, and it just didn't come to fruition for him this year.
Definitely didn't come to fruition for Ramondre. Definitely didn't come to fruition for our Patriots either, as we went 4-13 and saw Bill Belichick get his ass run out of town.
Hey, we were tanking, Pat. It's okay. That was the plan all along.
that was the plan all along until we won a couple of games that we shouldn't have at the end of the year. But that's a story for another day. But anyway, it's the dawn of a new era here in New England. Gerard Mayo takes over as the head coach, and with him comes a new offensive coordinator, Alex Van Pelt. Definitely not a household name. Aaron, be honest. Do you know who Alex Van Pelt is?
Absolutely not.
That's more or less what I figured, but I'll clue you in on him here real fast. He's been offensive coordinator in Cleveland for the last four seasons, and during that time, as you know, the Browns had a really potent rushing attack. They were, from a fantasy standpoint, they've had top five, top 17 running back finishes in half point PPR formats over that time frame. So five top 17 finishes in 4 years, very impressive. The three guys that did that were Nick Chubb, Kareem Hunt, and Jerome Ford last season contributed to that. And what we know about the Patriots here, like we said, the Belichick era is over. The Mac Jones era is over as well. But they're going to be bringing in either Jacoby Brissett to start games or maybe the rookie Drake May at some point. Either way, it's going to be a run-first football team. And as far as competition on this depth chart is concerned, the Patriots, as we know, lost Zeke Elliott in free agency. They did not draft a running back, and they elected to really only sign Antonio Gibson as the only high-profile, like, or somewhat pro-high-profile depth piece here. And some people might be high on Gibson. I know he has that college receiving background people love talking about, but he's been inconsistent at best as a pro, ended up in Ron Rivera's doghouse in the last two seasons in particular here. So I'm not overly high on a year five bounce back from him personally, but I just see a big opportunity here for Ramondre Stevenson. It was going to be a run-heavy attack. We know he can catch the ball as well, so he really is a dual threat. And when you tack on minimal competition outside of Antonio Gibson, I just think he can get bounce back something closer to the RB11 finish that we saw in 2022. Ethan, what do you think about all that from our hometown Patriots? Is there a glimmer of hope for us with Ramondre this season?
I think there is. I think Stevenson is a very talented back. And even though he didn't have a great year last year, I mean, Zeke was on the team, and which was obviously a high profile back. But Zeke didn't start really cooking until later when Stevenson got hurt, because Stevenson was playing pretty much 60%+ of the snaps weeks 1 through 10 for the most part. He was the workhorse. He was getting a decent amount of carries, and he was doing a ton of work in the receiving game. And that's my one concern with Gibson. You mentioned obviously Gibson, the receiver out of college, obviously running back and receiver in college. He has that skill set, but the Commanders just never really gave him, I guess, the full reins to kind of be that full every down back or highlight him in the receiving game. So I was very excited just in a pure Patriot fan football move to get Gibbs on the team. But in fantasy, I am curious to see how that's going to impact Stevenson in the receiving game. But either way, I think Stevenson, based on the moves they make, they made this offseason, is going to be clearly the first and second down back and the goal line back. So I think Stevenson is going to get a ton of opportunity, and I don't think he's going to go away in the receiving game, because I do think he is proven to be so far the better receiving back out of Gibson and Stevenson, even though I really do like Gibson. I really do hope Gibson does have a bounce back, because I do love his talent. But I think Stevenson is more of a low key winner, but definitely a winner, because obviously nobody of real consequence to push him for like those early down carries, those goal line carries, was brought onto the team.
Yeah, I agree. Touchdown equity should fall Ramondre's way, and hopefully they can use some of those draft picks on offensive line upgrades too. So hopefully at least one or two of those pan out. They can run behind a better unit. And overall, the Patriots are just overall a better offensive environment than we saw them in 2023. But let's keep the train moving. I know you said Zeke had a little bit of a late breakout there. We're actually going to talk about another guy, Ethan, who had a late season breakout in 2023 as well, and in Zamir White with the Raiders. What do you got to say about him?
Yeah, Zamir White was a pretty popular sleeper pick in rookie drafts coming out of Georgia. Obviously, then he went to the Raiders, and his stock kind of plummeted a little bit, obviously, with Jacobs being the workhorse there. But people did like Zamir White, the prospect. Obviously, he had the injury history, and we weren't really sure what kind of impact you'd have in the NFL, but definitely a decent prospect coming out, and didn't do much at all as a rookie. And he was given an opportunity this year down the stretch. He was able to start the last four games of the season, and he took advantage of that. He played in his first game starting once Jacobs went down. He played 65% of the snaps, and then the remaining three games on their schedule, he received over 80% of the carries. And took advantage of that. He was very productive down the stretch, and the Raiders didn't really bring in anybody of consequence in free agency or the NFL draft. They brought in Alexander Mattison, who obviously clearly can't be an every down back and is more of a complimentary piece. So I don't think he's going to threaten Zamir White's workload too much, if at all. And then the only running back that they drafted as competition came at pick 208 in the sixth round, Dylan Lobby. I think that's how you pronounce his name. But he was drafted in the sixth round, and he out of UNH, and he's more of a receiving back. So I don't think he's going to threaten Zamir White at all on those early down carries. Zamir White should be the primary goal line back, and he's going to have every opportunity to show he can be a 17-week starter in the NFL. And I'm definitely excited for everybody who had Zamir White on their dynasty rosters. His stock went way up after the NFL draft. I actually used that opportunity in one of my leagues to move on from him, to kind of take advantage of that spike. But definitely a guy that if you had, it could be a good time to cash in, or just a guy to keep on your team and ride out the production for at least 2024.
Aaron, if I said the acronym UNH in relation to a college, would you know which one it was?
I definitely would not. I was about ready to say, man, I think the folks over at UNH are appalled, Ethan, for not knowing if you pronounce his name right. Like, how dare you get Looney's name wrong? But
my apologies.
Yeah, no, I have to agree with that.
Yeah, my apologies. We're from New England, so yeah, me and Pat know. But hey, Pat, so what is this school? What is this UNH we're talking about here?
Well, you see, as a New Hampshire, born and raised in New Hampshire, transplanted to Massachusetts later, but spent most of my life in New Hampshire. It stands for the University of New Hampshire, the Wildcats up there. My wife actually went to school there for a couple of years, so I am somewhat familiar with the UNH campus. But yeah, outside of the country, like Aaron, or other parts of the nation, don't know, but. Yeah, back to fantasy, you know, Dylan Lobby, whatever we're calling him from the middle of nowhere school at his UNH. I don't see him being much of a threat either. But Aaron, do you have any thoughts on this backfield situation behind Zamir White, or about White in particular this season?
Yeah, I think Ethan captured it pretty well. I think Zamir White is a clear cut winner. You know, you mentioned just how he finished the season, finished very strong, you know, scoring over 15 fantasy points on the last four games, which, you know, with some of you out there may have actually helped you win a championship out there if you had him starting, especially if you were a Jacobs owner and you had to play White. But just on that note, I think just how the Raiders ended the season and, you know, promoting Pierce to their full-time head coach. I think with a young guy and, you know, some of those players did kind of stick together with the how they finished the season. And I think they're kind of proud with some of the stuff they did, though. So I think they will definitely Pierce will definitely take that momentum of what he saw with White. And I think Zamir is definitely the day one starter over Madison being the new guy over there, too. So I don't think much to argue there with Zamir definitely being an offseason winner.
Definitely, definitely. And I think he's one of those guys we kind of just waited around all offseason for the team to upgrade the position, whether it be the draft or free agency, or make a somewhat meaningful move, especially with so many high-profile running backs on the free agent market this time around. But they really just didn't do it. And that's kind of the same case here for the next player we're going to talk about down in Dallas, Aaron. So tell us about Rico Dowdle and tell us why he was a winner entering the 2024 season.
Yeah, like another guy. So I think with Rico Dowdle's story, you know, if we brought him up a year ago, and I know with our Sunday Surefire Best Ball League, I was actually when we were drafting our teams, I was the fool who drafted Malik Davis, thinking he was going to be a Pollard's backup last year. So little did I know that Cowboys had a lot of, you know, big plans for Rico Dowdle last year, and you did see a nice time share that he had. But yeah, definitely a huge winner, as we were, you know, kind of anxiously seeing who the Cowboys were going to take at running back, and come to find out they really drafted nobody, and they ended up signing Ezekiel Elliott back to the team again too. So I think it's perfect opportunity for Dowdle, where, you know, he may be that starter. You know, I think obviously with the, you know, having a fan favorite with Elliott, and Elliott actually played pretty decent last year, I think there will be a timeshare, but it's hard to argue that Rico Dowdle was not an offseason winner here. And definitely if you had him on Dynasty last year, just, you know, such a kind of a lucky, you know, like great story to, you know, buy low, and he ends up having some decent playing time on a high scoring offense too. So I think, you know, when you add up all that together, I think, you know, just definitely a nice piece you may be able to throw in a starting lineup and not feel too bad about in 2024 if all keeps going well for Rico.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of really all there is to say about Rico Dowdle. I think kind of another like forgotten piece that you're like, all right, this guy's a depth body, and then we'll see what they do to replace him. And they just like I said, they just really did do it. So, but I we'll just move on from him to another running back who yet again kind of fits that mold of a we thought would be a placeholder, but looks like they're not going to be. Ethan, talk to me about Zach Moss.
Yeah, Zach Moss, I thought was a massive win in the NFL draft. And it's funny, we're talking about Dallas and the Bengals, and you even wrote the charge into this. We talked about those were the three teams that we were excited for them to draft a running back early. What running back from this 2024 rookie class is going to go to these three teams? And none of them drafted a single back. Well, that's not true. I guess the Chargers drafted Vitali, I think in like the sixth or seventh round, but the Cowboys didn't draft a back, and the Cincinnati Bengals didn't draft a back. So definitely surprising. But they obviously, the Cincinnati Bengals have faith in Zach Moss. Zach Moss was honestly great in the beginning of the year last year when Jonathan Taylor was out. I mean, weeks 2 through 7, he didn't play in week 1, but weeks 2 through 7, he was RB 10, 4, 21, 2, 9, 30, and 14. And in week 7, when he was RB 14, he only played like 30 something percent of the snaps. So he didn't even have a huge workload, but I remember he had that a couple of big carries. But yeah, he played 39% of the snaps in that week, and he was just very efficient with his touches. I believe at the end of it, when Taylor came back, I believe in half point PPR, whatever it was, because that's the league I have him in. I think he was like RB5. So he clearly was great in the beginning of the season. He showed that he could be a relevant back, a back that teams could rely on and lean on. So the Cincinnati Bengals picked him up, and it looks like they're confident with him and Chase Brown. And by the reporting currently, it looks like Zach Moss is the preferred back on third down. Obviously a lot of things can change. But that's what I've read in terms of the Cincinnati backfield. But it's essentially Zach Moss and Chase Brown. And Zach Moss, he's a bigger back. I think he's gonna be the early down grinder with a chance, obviously, to play on third downs as a good pass blocker and be the goal line back. So I think it's wheels up for Zach Moss. He's another one of these guys that was kind of left for dead. He goes to the Colts. Okay, it's all about JT. JT gets hurt. Zach Moss shows something. Now he has a chance to be a starter in the NFL. So it's kind of a crazy career path for Zach Moss thus far. Obviously, kind of flaming out in Buffalo, and like I said, going to the Colts and now the Cincinnati Bengals. So it's definitely wheels up for Zach Moss.
Aaron, is this kind of a good story of why you should kind of be filling some late round bench spots, maybe in Dynasty with the running back position, just because it doesn't take that much to be viable?
Oh, for sure. For sure. I think it's funny, like that zero running back strategy we heard for a couple years. Honestly, it's funny. It's not the same intent it was invented, but I think for other reasons where, yeah, you can find value at that position these days relatively easy. And now, you know, contrary to the belief too, is at different ages, whereas you needed that 23, 24-year-old back, but you see some of these guys shining through just depending on how the contracts work out.
Yeah, for sure. All you really need is an opportunity, particularly for someone like Zach Moss, who has a low career touch total. I mean, I'd argue that's more important than the raw age itself when it comes to a back's ability to perform as they get older. And Moss, the odometer is low, and it looks like he's going to get a chance to show us what he can do as a lead back. And what's probably going to be a good offense. So I think he's definitely fits the mold of a good winner in the offseason. And I'm going to bring up one more winner here on my side, and we're going to go to the quarterback position. This is one of those things where it sometimes can be kind of tricky to find a winner or maybe a big time loser in. Is because there's only 32 starting jobs available, and we kind of know the story on just about all of them. So maybe this will be a surprise to some people, maybe it won't be, but I'm going to go with Will Levis as an offseason winner. And off the top, of course, this is likely more of a super flex opinion rather than a one QB type of opinion. But with Will Levis here, I mean, I actually look at him as the biggest QB winner of the entire offseason, just based on what the team has done around him. And yes, they lose Derrick Henry, and that's tough, but they added Calvin Ridley and Tyler Boyd to a wide receiver room that already had DeAndre Hopkins leading it. They signed Tony Pollard away from Dallas to share running back duties with Tajay Spears. Both of those guys are dual threats. They can both catch the ball in the backfield. And they also go ahead and draft J.C. Latham out of Alabama at number 7 overall to help solidify their offensive line. So what you have here is a prime example of a team setting a young quarterback up to succeed in year 2. And with Will Levis here, I mean, will he make the most of his help? I have no idea, but at least the team is putting enough around him. They're putting their money where their mouth is to bring in enough talent and pieces around him to make the evaluation as to whether or not he could play in the NFL or not. And I wish my Patriots would do the same thing. Don't you, Ethan?
I do. I think this is exactly what you need to do to see if your quarterback can play. I mean, like you said, the Tennessee Titans are putting everything they can around their young quarterback and seeing if he can play. I mean, now he has Hopkins, Ridley. They just signed Tyler Boyd. You have Pollard, Spears. I mean, it's on Will Levis now. I mean, Will Levis needs to prove to the Titans that he can play. And I know, obviously, not to keep bringing back to the Patriots, but like Mac Jones, I mean, the Patriots probably couldn't have done a worse job putting talent around him. And then you see a guy like Will Levis in Tennessee where they're doing everything they can to put all the pieces around him to help him succeed. So it is nice to see. And Will Levis, because of that, is a massive winner.
Definitely. And I just, I, you know, maybe I'm just a scorned Patriots fan at this point, right, where I keep bringing it back to to our team here, but let's go to a team that kind of had all the pieces in place and was kind of just missing that trigger man at quarterback. And Aaron, talk to us about the tandem of Kyle Pitts and Drake London and why they're both winners.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think this is kind of a no brainer one as well with Drake London and Kyle Pitts. I mean, I think anytime you go from a quarterback that was averaging 12 points or under weekly to a more of an established quarterback like Kirk Cousins. I mean, we're talking a 12 points per game with Desmond Ridder up to 19 to 20 points with Cousins per week. So, I mean, that's kind of how fantasy works, where if your quarterback is doing well, I think your pass catchers are going to be doing well too. So I know that I think honestly Pitts is going to have the biggest upside there too, where I think he was the biggest letdown, where I think with London, he was at least force fed the ball. But I think Cousins is, you know, established enough. He'll be able to spread the ball around and effectively and move the ball a little bit more down the field as well, too. So I think this is just kind of a you know, quick winner here, and kind of for obvious reasons. But yeah, definitely when you get that much of an upgrade at QB, your pass catchers are going to love it.
Yeah, I think so too. And I, you know, obviously the long term start, they get the short term guy in Cousins and what looks like probably a long term starter in Penix beyond that, which is relevant considering both Pitts and London are 24 years of age or younger. So they're going to be around for a while. So it's nice to know that at least have a plan at quarterback, both in the short term and the long term. Ethan, anything to add on this whole Atlanta situation before we move on to our losers?
The only thing I have to add is I'm glad we're finally getting a chance to see London Pitts, they get a chance to actually live up to all their hype and their draft capital. There's finally somebody behind center that that can chuck the rock better than Desmond Ridder and Heinicke, and it's now or never for both those guys. So this is a massive year for both of them, because if London is another wide receiver three back in wide receiver two season, and Pitts is in the top five tight end, I think they're going to take massive hits dynasty wise.
100% agree. They have to do it right now, as you said. But we're going to transition to losers, and we're going to start with a guy who he's kind of been there, done that at the quarterback position before, but he's kind of now entering a different space in his career. He's still young. We're talking Justin Herbert, but a lot has changed around him in the last few months, Ethan. So give us the rundown on him.
Yeah, so Herbert, I know you think he's a slightly bigger loser than I do, but he definitely, through this whole process, is definitely a loser, and you can see it in his dynasty ADP and his dynasty ranking amongst the quarterbacks. Obviously, Herbert's been known to just chuck the hell out of the football over the past few years, and obviously with Harbaugh coming to town, he's a guy that likes to play defense and run the football. And every move that he's made signifies that. I mean, their first pick at number five, they drafted Joe Alt. I mean, obviously that's going to anchor their offensive line. They got rid of Mike Williams. They got rid of Keenan Allen. And they didn't do a ton to replace those guys. I mean, they brought in pieces, but they're not locked and loaded pieces like a guy like Keenan Allen. And even Mike Williams, when he's healthy in that offense, was great. But I mean, you draft Ladd McConkey in the second round. I love Ladd McConkey. I think that could be an awesome fit, but he's still a rookie. Obviously you have QJ still on the team. He was a massive bust last year. Hopefully he can take a step. You bring in a guy like DJ Chark, who's kind of been a nomad over the last couple of years. I've always liked Chark, but I know the commission loves DJ Chark, but we'll see what he can do with that offense. And it just looks like all signs are pointing to a team that kind of wants to change the tune in LA. It looks like they want to be a tougher team that runs the ball, plays defense, and they're probably going to take the ball out of Justin Herbert's hands a little bit more than we've seen in the past, which is why I think Herbert's a loser, just because of the simple fact that, I mean, you're taking his number one target away, number two in Mike Williams when he's healthy, and you're basically putting a hodgepodge bunch of receivers hoping it works out, and all their moves indicate, like I said, to build the trenches and build from the inside out. I mean, they drafted Ladd McConkey in round two, and then they didn't draft another offensive player until the sixth and seventh rounds, where they drafted in the sixth round, they drafted a running back, Kamani Vidal, which I mentioned, out of Troy. And in the seventh round, Brendan Rice, and another seventh round receiver out of Michigan, Cornelius Johnson. So not a ton outside Ladd McConkey. So that's why I think with Herbert, people are just expecting a downtick in passing volume, and it's definitely hurting his stock.
Yeah, and part of the equation too. I mean, in the last every year Herbert's been in the league, four seasons now, they've been in the top five in pass attempts per game. So, like, that's inevitable. Like, just based on everything that you said, that the passing volume is going to come down here. So I think of him as a loser in 2024 standpoint. But you don't have a guy like Herbert to, you know, just hand the ball off forever. So, Aaron, do you think that looking at Herbert here, do you think he might actually be a buy low candidate in dynasty formats, just based on what we've seen in the past, even though 2024 might not be as you know, hit his ceiling that we've seen in previous years?
Yeah, that's a sneaky take. I mean, I think he's definitely going to fall down draft boards and probably all drafts in redraft and dynasty. I think if you are a Herbert owner, you're kind of praying where is he going to have to use his legs a little bit more, where he was already, you know, it was easy to bet that 30 yards over on rushing. Where does he get squeeze out a couple more yards, or does he have to run for, you know, on third downs because his receivers aren't getting open, you know, stuff like that, where hopefully he can sneak in a little bit more rushing stats. But yeah, I can see that. I kind of like the buy low take, but yeah, you're definitely going to see Herbert coming off the board a lot later than he has the last few years in fantasy.
For sure. Ethan, you buying low in dynasty on Herbert?
I mean, yes, I would. I think Herbert is a guy that I still trust and is a guy I would love to have on my team. And if I can get him cheaper at this point, I'd definitely be open to trading for him. I traded for him last year, so I'm hoping he can still live up to the price I paid for him. But I still believe in her. I don't think like you mentioned, Kamish, they're not going to completely take the ball out of his hands, right? It's, I mean, he's still Justin Herbert, so time will tell. But I still think he's a top. I still think he's a top 10 quarterback and a QB1.
I would agree on Herbert. You know, even if 2024 doesn't go according to plan, there it's only a matter of time before he regains at least most of the super high profile floor that he had earlier in his career. I would definitely agree on that. But let's go back to the running back group here for a minute here. We've talked about a bunch of guys who were winners in the earlier segment, but let's go to one guy who I definitely have as a loser here, and that's going to be Chuba Hubbard. And I guess I have a funny stat and sort of a trivia question here for you guys. So if you count interim head coaches, since Hubbard has been drafted, that was in the year 2020, guess how many head coaches Hubbard will have played for, including Dave Canales, who was just hired for the 24 season. How many?
Coaches total or just interim?
So how many head coaches in total if you count the interim?
I'm going four.
Ooh. Aaron?
Ooh, I was thinking three, but yeah, four maybe, right?
So what Dave Canales will be the fifth head coach that he's played for in 4 years. The team has also had three different general managers in that same span, so when I started this out here by saying that this new regime has zero allegiance to him whatsoever, I really mean it, guys. You know, as we know, the team signed Miles Sanders last season. That didn't work out. He's on the roster for now and presumably will be healthy entering 2024. We'll see if he sticks on the team or not, but at least for now, he's in the way. Team signed Rashad Penny. He's just another veteran guy in that room. But the most importantly here, the biggest addition has to be Jonathan Brooks, who they took in the second round of the NFL draft. He was the first running back off the board, and a lot of analysts had him as their number one running back in this class. Now, Brooks is recovering from November ACL surgery, so maybe the door is open for Hubbard in the early going to be the guy here, at least maybe even just the leader of a committee. He could get somewhat of an opportunity, so, you know, you never know. Maybe he could be good in the early going, but as much as I like what this team's kind of trying to do offensively, they have a ways to go on offense. They were actually tied with the Patriots last season for the least amount of points per game scored in a year since 2012. So the floor was very, very low last year. And Hubbard's a guy who makes his bones by rushing the football. So I'm not sure how many positive game scripts they're going to be in this upcoming season, even with all the changes that I think are going to help more so in the long term. I'm just pretty down on Hubbard this season. Did anyone want to add on to any of that?
Yeah, I'll comment real quick there too. I think you mentioned, yeah, his main strength is just being able to run the football, because his pass catching ability really does just flat out suck. I think when he entered the entered the league, I think that was a big watch out. And I know I was kind of a Chuba fan in college, but just watching games, I've just firsthand just watched him just flat out drop many balls, and especially like I remember at least two or three just on the goal line where he just drops a wide open swing pass for a easy touchdown. So I think to that point, like the third down work will definitely cut into his time. I think the one thing he may have going for him is he could be the day one starter, as you said, with Brooks, kind of healing from his injury. But yeah, I think long term, I don't really know how many games you're really gonna have with Hubbard starting him in a fantasy lineup, unless something else happens.
Chuba Hubbard is definitely a loser, obviously for the simple fact that they drafted Jonathan Brooks in the second round. So obviously anybody who had Chuba Hubbard hoping that he'd survive the NFL draft, obviously he did not. I just don't really understand why the Panthers thought, like, hey, you know what our team needs? We need to draft the running back with our second round pick, even though they're light years away from competing, and they just drafted a position that is very replaceable and has a short shelf life. So I don't really get the pick from that standpoint. I mean, obviously, you brought in Sanders, you paid him some money. I think it didn't work out, but I mean, Chuba and Sanders combination, I think, would have been more than serviceable this year. But yeah, Chuba's not going to give you a ton in the receiving game. And Jonathan Brooks, obviously, he's a much better receiver than Chuba ever dreams of being. But I do think Chuba Hubbard is going to be somewhat valuable in the early stretch. I think he's going to have every opportunity to be the starter week one.
I'm with you there on Hubbard too. I think we're kind of all sort of in lockstep with that one. So we'll move on here. In the winter section, we talked about kind of a collection of skill players on the Falcons here. So we're going to do the same thing here in the loser category, but this time we're going to the Houston Texans. And we're going to talk about the wide receiver room that just all of a sudden got really crowded down there with the addition of Stephon Diggs to that collection. Aaron, what do you think about that group of skill players?
Yeah. It's always a fun conversation, because I think if you're a Texans fan, you love it, right? Because you just added to the firepower. But in fantasy, we definitely hate it. I know it's not how I like building my my roster, especially at the wide receiver position when you got a lot of unknowns. So I like to kind of just talk from a high level here, where like I think from a dynasty perspective, if you had Stephon Diggs, he was already getting up there in age, but if he was on your fantasy team, you're probably a contender, and you're probably happy with him being that alpha over there in Buffalo and demanding all those targets. In that situation, him going over to the Texans definitely screwed that position up for you. And then on the flip side, if you were a Nico Collins owner in Dynasty, I think kind of similar thing where too, he's young. And I think he was kind of looking like he was going to be that main target king over there. And, I think from a dynasty perspective, you're kind of looking forward to that. And then the Tank Dell side, I think just his explosiveness and being able to maybe play him in a flex position and come down with some big games, where now I think with just the three-headed horseman here that it's tricky. I think just as dynasty or fantasy player, I don't think we like that. I think unless literally one of these three guys is your absolute worst, like maybe flex play at the starting position, or if they got to come off your bench or something. But I think in fantasy, definitely don't like it. If you're a Texans fan, I think you are obviously happy. But yeah, I mean, we talk fantasy on the show, so definitely not a good position to be in if you're an owner of those three guys.
Ethan, this is a situation where CJ Stroud's a winner just because of all these excellent toys to play with, but the receivers themselves kind of suffer somewhat as a result.
100%, and that you basically took the words out of my mouth. It's essentially what I was going to say. We're going to have a similar thought process later on this episode when we get to another loser. But yeah, Stroud obviously clear winner. You just get more talent, but now obviously, I mean, you with the three good receiving targets in the obviously with the wide receivers, but you also have a really good tight end in Dalton Schultz. So it's going to be week to week. I mean, Diggs, who knows how much he has left in the tank? Obviously, he had a pretty rough stretch there at the end of his Buffalo career, but I still think he's a good receiver. But yeah, I think it's going to be a mess week to week. And I mean, there's no way Nico Collins, Tank Dell, and Diggs are all going to be wide receiver ones or high end wide receiver twos. It's just, there's just not enough footballs to go around.
Agreed. I think what they need to have happen, not that we want this to happen, of course, but if one of those guys gets injured, I think it opens up a big opportunity just to have the targets available in this offense for it to be successful. Then maybe down the stretch, if that happens, one of these guys turns into a league winner because they're a good talented player and a good offense just getting more volume. So that's an interesting situation. Maybe if their prices drop some when redraft season rolls around, I'll be in on them, but it's kind of tough to determine how that target order is going to go. And if I have to spend relatively early draft capital to do it, I'm just going to pass and move in a different direction. I just said the words early draft capital, and the Raiders had an early pick in this year's draft, and they kind of went a little bit of a surprise here. At least in terms of the position group they went with, and they took Michael Mayer, who was BPA, best player available on the board at the time. But where does this kind of shake out from a fantasy standpoint, Ethan? And why are we talking about Mayer as a big loser?
Yeah, and I think you're right with the best player available. I don't think the Raiders intended probably to draft Brock Bowers at pick 13. But as I alluded to in the last episode, a lot of general managers thought Brock Bowers was a steal of the draft. He's just, obviously, we talked about Brock Bowers. The guy, I think, is an unbelievable tight end prospect, and I think he's going to relegate Michael Mayer to the pine here, at least the fantasy pine anyways. He's still obviously going to get out there, but Brock Bowers is going to be the tight end one of this team. So Michael Mayer, a massive loser. I mean, he was the 35th pick in last year's draft. So to see them go back to the tight end, well, not good for Michael Mayer managers. And Getsy, obviously he's coming over from the Chicago Bears. Cole Kmet, he played the majority of snaps for that offense. I mean, Cole Kmet was tight end 7 last year. They only ran 12 personnel, which is one running back and two tight ends, on 23.2% of their snaps last year for the Chicago Bears. Obviously, they didn't have two talented tight ends like a Brock Bowers and Michael Mayer. Robert Tonyan he's just not as talented as Cole Kmet. So Cole Kmet obviously deserved to be out there the majority of snaps, but it'll be interesting to see how they deploy it. I think Brock Bowers is going to clearly be the receiving tight end, the receiving weapon. I think they're going to use him all over the field, where Michael Mayer will still obviously be there in two tight end sets. He's a good run blocker, a good overall tight end prospect, obviously a tight end that can do it all. So he's going to get utilized, but I mean, to see Brock Bowers go off the board at pick 13, it just not good for Michael Mayer. Unfortunately, the guy that was, I mean, the tight end one for coming out of college for some time, clearly wasn't. I mean, when Michael Mayer, I mean, people thought he was going to be the tight end one until that final year, when obviously Kincaid kind of soared up, and so did Laporta. But Michael Mayer was a very good prospect that now it looks like is going to be the backup to Brock Bowers.
Yeah, really tough spot there. I would argue that no one got nuked more significantly from a fantasy standpoint than Michael Mayer did with the selection of Brock Bowers in the first round, Aaron. Would you agree?
Oh, sure. I mean, like, you could probably take that draft pick and just burn it last year. I mean, it's you tried, but unfortunately, I can't see a story or scenario unless he gets a revival on another contract down the road or something like that. But yeah, definitely not looking good if you're a dynasty owner with a Mayer.
Definitely. And there's one more player we're going to talk about. We're sticking with the tight end theme, and Ethan actually just brought him up here a moment ago, and that's Cole Kmet. And I think he definitely has to fall into this category of an offseason loser. And you know, other than Michael Mayer, he's probably the second most high profile tight end to take a hit in my estimation. And I could see a lot of fantasy managers falling into the trap here of the Bears selecting a rookie quarterback, and kind of the natural sort of lazy low hanging fruit argument with that is, oh, it's a rookie quarterback. They love their security blanket with the tight end, Cole Kmet. This is going to be good, blah, blah, blah. But look what else this team has, guys. I mean, they have DJ Moore, as we know. They brought in Keenan Allen. They drafted Rome Odunze in the top 10. And then they go ahead in the offseason, they go ahead and get Shane Waldron to be their offensive coordinator. Waldron was in Seattle for the last three seasons and absolutely ruined Noah Fant in Seattle. Like, and I'm still jaded about this because you guys know I'm a big Noah Fant guy, and he just runs this ridiculous tight end by committee approach where he was running like Parkinson out there and Will Disley and all these other guys that really should not be running routes over Noah Fant. So you also factor in like they have the trio of wide receivers in Chicago now, the same system that they had last season in Seattle when they drafted Jaxon Smith-Njigba to play alongside Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. And in those three seasons in Seattle, no tight end finished in the top 15 under Shane Waldron's offense in fantasy. So we're in fantasy, there's not a ton of fantasy viable tight ends. So you could argue it doesn't take much to be viable, but we definitely don't want to be taking shots on guys that are outside the top, 15 at their position if we're going to bank on. And Kmet has enough name value and did enough in previous seasons where he's probably going to be drafted as a top eight or so tight end. And that's a guy I'm definitely going to be staying away from if that's the price range here. What are your guys' thoughts on that?
Yeah, I'll just say, just as a fellow Iowan, I mean, he definitely ruined tight end you with Noah Fant. And I was also a Noah Fant, a truther as well, where, I think with Everett, I think you said it best, before we started recording, that Everett's like not an elite tight end, but he's good enough to be dangerous, and where they can kind of split it up here and there, where he'll come down with a few touchdowns or a couple nice grabs that will definitely take away from Kmet as well. But couldn't agree more, where I think Kmet will definitely get drafted higher from the inexperienced fantasy player. So this would be a great episode to zone in here. Don't draft Kmet too high.
Yeah, like I alluded to not too long ago, the really only winner in Chicago was Caleb Williams. I think all the receiving options in this entire offense were losers, just because, just like we talked about in Houston. I mean, there's just only so many receptions to go around, only so many touchdowns. I mean, you have DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Rome Odunze, Cole Kmet. You have DeAndre Swift out of the backfield. It is a loaded offense. So, Caleb Williams, who's his favorite target going to be? We do not know, but Caleb Williams, massive, massive winner, and everyone else, unfortunately, ends up on the loser list.
I agree. I definitely agree on that. But that was fun, guys, to buzz through all the offseason winners and losers. We wait so long for all these things, the draft, free agency, coaching changes and all that. And it's awesome to finally have that clear picture. And at least for at this moment in time, we have an idea of what these rosters are going to look like coming into training camp. But definitely a lot more to follow here. The NFL offseason is busy, busy, busy. So I'll definitely keep you up to date on everything going forward. But until next time, folks, peace.